Ad hoc sajab,
with the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
who is beyond the reach of the materialistic mind or experimental knowledge. Alambam, being constantly in contact. Iha, in this material world. Ashubha Atmanaha, whose mind is materially contaminated. Sharirinaha, of a living entity who has accepted a material body. Samsriti, of material existence. Chakra, the cycle. Jatanam, completely stopping. Tat, that. Brahmanirvana, connected with the Supreme Brahman, the Absolute Truth. Sukham, transcendental happiness. Viduhu, understand. Buddha, those who are spiritually advanced. Tataha, therefore. Vajadhong, engage in devotional service. Ridahe, within the core of the heart. Rit Ishwaram, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The super soul within the heart. So translation. The real problem of life is the repetition of birth and death, which is like a wheel rolling repeatedly up and down. This wheel, however, completely stops when one is in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, by the transcendental bliss realized from constant engagement in devotional service, one is completely liberated from material existence. All learned men know this. Therefore, my dear friends, O sons of the Asuras, immediately begin meditating upon and worshiping the Super Soul within everyone's heart. So you can repeat. The real problem of life is the repetition of birth and death, which is like a wheel rolling repeatedly up and down. This wheel, however, completely stops when one is in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, by the transcendental bliss realized from constant engagement in devotional service, one is completely liberated from material existence. All learned men know this. Therefore, my dear friends, O sons of the Asuras, immediately begin meditating upon and worshiping the Super Soul within everyone's hearts. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Generally, it is understood that by merging into the existence of Brahman, the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth, one becomes completely happy. The words Brahma Nirvana refer to connecting with the Absolute Truth, who is realized in three features, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan Iti, Shabhyate. One feels Brahma Shuka, spiritual happiness, by merging into the impersonal Brahman, because the Brahma Jyoti is the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yasya Prabha Prabhavato Jagananda Koti. Yasya Prabha, the impersonal Brahman, consists of the rays of Krishna's transcendental body. Therefore, whatever transcendental bliss one feels from merging in Brahman is due to contact with Krishna. Contact with Krishna is perfect Brahma Sukha. When the mind is in touch with the impersonal Brahman, one becomes satisfied, but one must advance further to render service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
For one's remaining merged in the Brahman effulgence is not always assured. As it is said, Aruya Kurtrena Parampadam Tata Patanchito Nadrita Yushmadangraha. One may merge in the Brahman feature of the Absolute Truth, but there is a chance that one may fall because of not being acquainted with Adhoksaja or Vasudeva. Of course, such Brahma Sukha undoubtedly eliminates material happiness. Who wants to eliminate material happiness anyway? But when one advances through impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma to approach the Supreme Personality of God and in relationship with him as a servant, friend, parent, or conjugal lover, one's happiness becomes all-pervading. That's a good reason. Then one automatically feels transcendental bliss, just as one becomes happy seeing the shining of the moon. One acquires natural happiness upon seeing the moon. But when one can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's transcendental happiness increases hundreds and thousands of times. As soon as one is immediately, intimately connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one surely becomes free from all material contamination. Yāna vṛttis tanu vṛttam. This cessation of all material happiness is called nivṛtti or nirvana. Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī says in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.138, Brahmānando bhavetesya chetparāda gunikṛtaḥ naiti bhakti. Thank you. Bhakti sukham bodhe paramanhu tulamapi. If Brahmananda, the bliss of merging in the Brahman effulgence, were multiplied 100 trillion times, it would still not equal even an atomic fragment of the ocean of transcendental bliss felt in devotional service. So Brahmabhuta Prasanatma, the Soshatina Khangshati, Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu, Madbhaktim, Labhate Param. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward all living entities. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto the Lord. It's from the Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter, text 54. If one advances further from the Brahma Nirvana platform, one enters the stage of devotional service, Madbhaktim, Labhate Param. The word Adhoksaja Lombam refers to keeping the mind always engaged in the Absolute Truth, who is beyond the mind and material speculation. Savaimana Krishna Padaravindayoho. This is the result of deity worship. See? By constantly engaging in the service of the Lord and thinking of his lotus feet, one is automatically freed from all material contamination. Thus, the word Brahma Nirvana Sukham indicates that when one is in touch with the Absolute Truth, material sense gratification is completely nullified. It said, Adhoksaja Lambam Miha Shubhatmana Shadirana Samsruti Chakra Satanam. The Brahma Nirvana Sukham Vidhur Vidas Tato Bhajat Hom Vidayevya Ridishvaram. So, Om Ganat Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, in this verse, it mentions the real problem of life is the repetition of birth and death. Yes, that is the real problem in life. But it is necessary to understand the cause of that problem. And I was listening yesterday to a conversation Srila Prabhupada was having in France with a Buddhist person. It was a very interesting conversation. And the Buddhist said, you know, the real problem of life is the repetition of birth. It was Zen Buddhist, actually. A particular branch of Buddhism. He was also saying this, the real problem of life is the repetition of birth and death. So you've got to get out of the repetition of birth and death. As we know, the Buddhist philosophy is
Material existence is suffering. Suffering is caused by attachment. You give up the attachment. You give up the suffering. And then the Eightfold Path is the one that helps you do that. So I mentioned that many times before. So Prabhupada said, basically, you have to find out who you are first. And the Buddhists said, no, it's not important. You don't have to find out who you are. And he used the example, one example that Prabhupada has used often in regard to finding out when the soul fell down from the spiritual world. Prabhupada said, if you're drowning, you don't ask how you get there. But this gentleman said the same thing. You know, you're drowning in the material world. And then you have to, don't try to ask how you got there, but just try to ask how to get out. And so Prabhupada said, you have to understand that the cause, not simply the problem of life. You know, there's problems, but there's also causes. Just like if you have a disease, and you got problems with the disease. I mean, like you're coughing, or your, you know, little pustules are coming out of your skin, or something like that. You know, to be a little gross. Then you can just try to engage in what they call symptomatic relief. That means just dealing with the symptoms. It's interesting. I've been studying medicine a lot lately, and especially about cancer and everything like that. And it turns out that, you know, cancer is a symptom of some other imbalance in the body, you know, some thing with the immune system or other things like that. I'm not going to get into the details. But in any case, you have to find out what is the cause rather than just the symptoms. The symptoms are a problem, that's for sure, and they may kill you. But what is the cause of the symptoms? And so Prabhupada kept saying this, and the Buddhist kept, the Zen Buddhist guy, and he was speaking through someone else because his English wasn't so good. I don't know if you've heard this conversation. It's quite interesting. What I've been doing lately when I'm listening to Prabhupada, I concentrate on the conversations and morning walks, because I learn a lot of how Prabhupada is interacting with people. And sometimes the devotees are actually even challenging Prabhupada. Of course, they're not really good at challenging, because they're a little afraid of offending Prabhupada. So the Mayavad philosophy they present is not really that accurate. But when Prabhupada is actually speaking to a Buddhist, it's very accurate. And the Buddhist doesn't care about offending Prabhupada at all. So anyway, so he keeps saying, you have to get out. And then Prabhupada said, in addition to understanding what is the cause, you have to understand the goal. And then the guy said, no, you don't have to understand the goal. And even, you can't have goals. And Prabhupada kept saying, it was so funny, Prabhupada kept saying, this is nonsense. You know, I was thinking the poor guy is being called a nonsense about 100 times in the conversation with Prabhupada. But he took it. And he was arguing with Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, this is nonsense. He said, you have to understand what the goal is. And the guy said, you're not supposed to have a goal. Actually, in Zen Buddhism, the point is not only not to have a goal, but to be detached from even satori, or happiness. You know, you have to become detached from everything. You know, so it's just, I was just trying to understand what it is that Zen Buddhism is teaching. And then Prabhupada actually said, but then you're having a goal. That detachment is a goal. Yeah. You know, so Prabhupada was pointing out the inherent, you know, hypocrisy or contradiction in the Buddhist philosophy. And then the Buddha said, no, you have to be, no, you're really even detached from having a goal. And Prabhupada said, that is a goal. It's like Prabhupada talks sometimes about Mayavadis who say that books are useless. And they write this in books. You can imagine saying, books are useless. You know, whatever. Are you writing books for about why books are useless? You think your book is useful, but everybody else's book is bad. Especially Krishna's book. So It's such an interesting conversation Prabhupada was having. And ultimately, you know, Prabhupada pointed out you have to know where you're going, what your goal is, because if you don't have a goal, you're a nonsense.
And then you have to know the process for achieving the goal, not only the symptoms. So ultimately, the guy didn't surrender, unfortunately. But at least he got purified by Prabhupada's association. So so we are suffering in this material world, I guarantee. I can attest for that by first-hand experience, you know, adiatmic, adibodhic, adidaivic miseries, adi-devotiac miseries. Miseries from other living entities, devotees, miseries from the material energy and materials from our own body and mind, anxiety, distress, all these different miseries are there. So we really do have to come to the platform of happiness to overcome these miseries. It's interesting that in the 14th chapter, text 27 of Bhagavad Gita, there's an interesting verse that seems to indicate that you simply merge into the Brahman and you'll overcome. You can look that up, 14:27. Brahmano hi pratishtaham amitashas payasya cha sasvatashasya cha dharmasya sukasya kanti kasya cha. That in this verse, Krishna states that I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is the immortal, imperishable, eternal, and the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. So you have that statement there, and many people come confused when Krishna says it. That's Prabhupada's translation, incidentally. The constitutional position of ultimate happiness. So you read that, and you think, wow, Brahman. You know, the impersonalists read that, even Prabhupada's translation. And then it was interesting that one devotee, it was actually Vrindavan Maharaj, wrote Prabhupada a letter concerning that particular verse. He asked, you know, does this mean that actually that if you're a Brahman, realize that that's your constitutional position of ultimate happiness? And Prabhupada replied in a very interesting way. He said, because the spiritual world is within the Brahman effulgence. You know, in other words, you have the planets in the spiritual world. I'm just explaining what Prabhupada said. You have the planets in the spiritual world, like the Goloka Vrindavan planet, Vaikuntha planets, etc., that are floating in the Brahman effulgence. So that's the position. Just like you may say that we are here in New Goloka, and it's on the Earth planet, so the Earth planet has this ultimate happiness in it. But the ultimate happiness is not on the Earth when you step outside, but the or go into the French Quarter in New Orleans, but the ultimate happiness is when you come to the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Just like it says about Kali Yuga, Kalair Doshanadhe Rajana Sheko Mahadguna Kirtanadeva Krishna Shas Mukta Sangaparambhajet, that Kali Yuga is an ocean of difficulty, but there's one good quality that actually sort of like counterbalances all the bad qualities in Kali Yuga. What's that good quality? Like Kali Yuga is a great time. You can say that. That doesn't mean to be under the influence of Kali is fantastic. It means that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is there in Kali Yuga and one gets the opportunity. So anyway, so that's how Prabhupada explained this particular verse in 14:20 in the Bhagavad Gita. You have that verse in front of you, right? So that's how Prabhupada explained it. And so, yes, because in order to enter the spiritual world, you have to pass through the Brahman effulgence. I mean, you actually see that when Krishna left this material world to visit the Mahavishnu with Arjuna. You know, it was very bright. They had to wear their sunglasses, basically. Not really, but as they were going through the Brahman effulgence, there was a dark area and a bright area. So that's another point here. So how, like these Prahlad Maharaj is recommending here, immediately begin meditating upon and worshiping the super soul within everyone's heart. Now it's interesting, he also didn't recommend think of the Lord's pastimes in Vrindavan. Because they weren't ready for that. And so how does one worship the super soul? That's also another interesting thing. One worships the super soul by understanding, according to Krishna and the Gita, Matak Smriti Yogyanam Apovanam Cha, that the Supersoul is giving us intelligence, remembrance, and forgetfulness according to our desire. And also, the Supersoul, there's two Supersouls. There's a Supersoul of the universe and a Supersoul in everyone's heart. In one sense, Garbha Dakshay Vishnu is considered a type of Supersoul because he's the Supersoul of the universe. In other words, just like the Supersoul in our heart. And so we see how the Lord is behind everything. Like Krishna says, the one who sees everything in me, sees me in everything and sees everything in me, is never lost to me, nor am I ever lost to them. So we actually just see Krishna's actions behind everything. It's important for a devotee too, because as soon as we begin to see that something is happening due to someone else's fault or due to chance, actually, I was listening to another class where Prabhupada said there's no chance. It's interesting. I mean, because when I was in the university, I studied probability. Probability means you study chance. You know, you throw a dice, or let's say a coin. It's easier for me to calculate a coin. You know, heads or tails, considering it's equally balanced, it'll generally come up over the long run, you know, 50% on one side, 50% on the other side. And so Prabhupada said there's no chance. Like one time, it was interesting, there was one game of chance the devotees played to obtain the temple in Vrindavan. You know that story? That there was this lady who was supposed to donate the land. Has anyone heard the story before? You've heard, Krishna Priya's heard the story. And she was thinking, I should either donate it to this other lady, Sadhu, who after this point really began to hate our movement. But anyway, I should either donate it to this lady, Sadhu, or to ISKCON. And the devotees, they didn't flip a coin. They did something that was just like a chance thing. And I forget, do you remember what it was, Krishna Priya? It was almost like flipping a coin, you know, heads I win, tails you lose. But I know that's a joke. Heads or tails. And they did that and they won. So it was like, of course it was Krishna's arrangement, you know, that we now have this Vrindavan temple. So Prabhupada said there's no chance. So when we see things happening in this world, like challenges, like for example in the temple we're all going through challenges now because of anything like that, it's actually Krishna. And we have to take advantage of that and become Krishna conscious. So this is really what it means to see the Supersoul everywhere, because he's directing the wanderings of the living entities. He's giving intelligence, forgetfulness, memory, etc., like that. So for us, of course, we should see like that. In addition, Prabhupada comments in the end of this purport about deity worship. Prabhupada said, the word adhoksa jalambam refers to keeping the mind always engaged in the absolute truth, which is beyond the mind of material speculation. So vayamana Krishna padaravindayo. This is the result of deity worship. Interesting. Because without deity worship, our consciousness tends to become very ritualistic or even impersonalistic. You know, we're doing a process of devotional service. But seeing the deity every day reminds us that Krishna is a person, Prabhupada says, by constantly engaging in the service of the Lord, and that having the regulated deity worship definitely constantly engages us in the service of the Lord. If we have home deities, it doesn't really constantly engage us in the service of the Lord. But the temple worship is just like every day. I was watching also a video of Prabhupada, who was installing Gornatai in Australia, because I have this Prabhupada series that, you know, I'll be glad to share with everybody as a Christmas present. And I can load in everybody's computer. And Prabhupada was installing Gornatai in Melbourne, Australia. And Prabhupada was just like demanding a level of engagement, because they have three sets of deities there. And Prabhupada said, you must have three pujaris, at least two RTs a day. You know, that's a lot. I mean, in Fiji, we started with three pujaris, and then we ended up with one. I told the devotees not to do three, but they thought, you know, through the mode of passion. They were thinking, we're going to be able to maintain it, but they weren't able to maintain it. And of course, in deity worship, that's actually offensive to do something and then go back. Once you do something, you have to stick to it. You can start very simple and just do something very basic, but do something you can do on a daily basis and continue to do, nitya seva for the deity. So anyway, so Prabhupada was actually putting them or ordering them to come to a very high standard. You know, three pujaris. Can you imagine if we had to have three pujaris in the morning for Mangalarti and for the 7 o'clock arti? We barely have three devotees in the temple. I mean, what to speak about three pujaris? I mean, Mahamantra would be on the altar all the time. So, in addition to shopping, in addition to doing everything else that he does. So, anyway, so the deity worship is essential. It reminds us that God is a person and he needs service. Like a person, let's say if we had a human person here. We do have human persons. They need to be fed every day. You can't just feed them when you want it. I mean, and let's say if it's your guru like Prabhupada, you can't just feed Prabhupada when you, you know, whenever you want to eat, you offer food to Prabhupada first. Can you imagine that? The standard of service? Let's say Prabhupada was visiting the temple and Prabhupada said, you know, can I have some prasadam? And then you said to Prabhupada, I don't eat until 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so you'll have to wait till then for your offering. So that's why the temple worship, the regulated worship, that really forces us to constantly engage in the Lord's service. And of course, we shouldn't be over-endeavoring. I was thinking of this also when I was watching this video of Prabhupada in Melbourne, Australia. The devotees had actually over-endeavored before Prabhupada came, so they were all sleeping in the class. You can see the video of Prabhupada giving class and all the devotees were just like doing dive bombing. You know what dive bombing is? They're just like trying to stay awake going, And the Prabhupada got upset with that. So that means they said that they hadn't slept for like 3 weeks before Prabhupada's arrival. Generally it was like that when Prabhupada was coming. So anyway, so we want to make some arrangements so we're constantly engaged in the Lord's service. Now, those who are not inclined towards deity worship, at least they should come and see the deities. And I was asked a question yesterday in the email, how do you keep yourself focused in the Lord's service, doing something according to your psychophysical nature? I mean, it's not that everybody will be inclined to going on the altar and doing deity service. So we all have a different nature according to our varnashram situation. And then we fix something that engages us 100% of the time. I mean, you know, in my particular life, somehow or other, Krishna's arranged that I'm engaged 110% of the time, you know, emails and counseling devotees and all that other stuff. So, you know, barely a moment to spare, barely a moment to be in Maya. So, anyway, any questions or comments about any of these things? Yeah.
Before I became a devotee, you don't need a guru. Don't listen to anyone. He was teaching that.
Yeah, so you should have said, why should we listen to you, you rascal? Basically, they're saying, don't listen to anyone except for me. And you'd say, there's so many contradictions the Mayavadis have. And the Zen Buddhists, it's just like, huh? Satori, you're supposed to achieve Satori, but you shouldn't want it. I mean, it's nonsense. And Prabhupada was so direct. He could say things. Of course, we shouldn't do those same things. If you meet a Zen Buddhist, don't tell him he's nonsense. Unless you happen to have a position like Prabhupada had, you know, you're much older that you can get away with things. I mean, people get very offended.
So Prabhupada's heart is pure without a straight trace of any...
Yeah. Yeah, if we say it's nonsense, we want to establish our superiority. That's our intention, you know. We think we're better. So it has to be out of compassion, that like Prabhupada was compassionate with everybody. So any other questions? Yeah.
I was thinking about what we were talking about the Brahmin indulgence and
Yeah.
And so that's what makes it personal, just taking
Taking things out of context.
Yeah, and not saying that Krishna's the basis of everything, not only the Brahma, but the Buddha.
Yeah, Aham Sarvasya Prabhupada. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, that particular verse, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, means I am the basis. Or I'm the source. I'm the, basically, Pratishta. That means I'm the creator. It comes from me. It comes from me. So they take the first part of that verse, the second part, I'm sorry, without the first part. Unfortunately. Okay, I'll bet happy.